This is Living the RV Dream, episode 62 for Friday, June 29th, 2018.
I'm riding with my RV, wherever I want to be, 'cause I'm free in my RV.
Well, hello, happy campers, hello everybody, and happy Friday once again. And I know, I'm a little late. I usually publish this on Fridays at 6 a.m., which means that I actually record them on Thursday at some point during the day. But this one I'm recording right now on Friday. It is almost 9 a.m. in the morning here in Miami, Florida, and in the United States, of course. And I'm going to release it sometime mid-morning, I suppose. But, you know, I've had other things in my mind. I got me a new computer. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit here. So it's at the beginning of the show. It's going to be a little bit of a technology show. And then we'll go into other subjects. You know, back in, was it 2007 or 2008? Actually, 2007, I switched from a PC to a Mac computer. I had been a PC. I was a tinkerer even in my late teens, early 20s. All those years, I used to build my own computers. I liked to play with the technology. But eventually, technology became a tool. And of course, at that time in 2007, Apple, they hadn't released the iPhone yet. And their cash cow was really computers. So they were really focused on computers, and Macintoshes were clearly, especially at that time, Windows had just released Windows Vista. Macintosh was a lot more reliable, and it even looked prettier, you know, the user interface. So I was enticed by it eventually. Originally, I bought a Mac Mini, you know, just to get my feet, you know, in the water, tiptoeing, you know. And that Mac Mini turned out to be pretty good. it was like the cheap Mac, you know, if you, in entry level, if you will. And I think it still is. I think they still make it. And it was like $500. And I said, yeah, we'll begin with the Mac Mini. But by the next year, I had already bought a laptop. And eventually, for the past 10 years, that's what I've been using. And you get set in your ways. It is very hard. It was a hard transition originally from PC to Mac. A lot of things about Mac annoyed me. But eventually, I got used to them. And then after that, I got an iPhone. So I was really a Mac head during those years, 2008, 2009, 2010. I even went to Macworld Expo, the last good Macworld Expo in San Francisco, California, before Apple pulled out. And then Mac Break Expo, I think, lasted like another year, and that was it. And then eventually, about 5 years ago, as soon as Android caught up with the iPhone, I switched to Android. You know, it was a little more freedom. You could save files wherever you want. It was more like a little computer. Apple always kept things a little more locked down. And what's happening with Apple lately? Have you seen the Mac computers lately? And it used to be all about performance and power and all this and options. And lately, it's like you have two ports, you know, two USB Type-C that you need an adapter to plug anything into that computer. And they're more focused on making them lighter and thinner and sexier, but not necessarily more powerful. And since I've been editing 4K videos for a little over 2 years now, that old Macintosh is starting to show its age, especially after I upgraded to the latest version of the operating system. It just stalled. All of a sudden, it became really, really slow. So I switched. I'm switching back to PC. And it is hard to get used to certain things. You know, you create this muscle memory to... I use the keyboard a lot instead of the mouse. So the Alt key on the Mac, which is the Apple key, you use it like to copy and paste Alt C, Alt V, Alt S to save. And now I have to get used to using Control again. Control C, Control V, Control S. That's one of the things. But the most importantly, I'm switching from Final Cut Pro, which is the software I've been using on the on the Mac, and Motion 5, which is what I do to make all the nice graphics and the maps sometimes, and even the title, the titles in my videos, when, you know, the RV comes zooming by and then the whatever text I want to put on the screen, it shows up right after. Or is it before? Yeah, the text comes before and then the RV comes running over. All those things, all those little graphics I'm going to have to redo, because I'm not Final Cut and Motion only work on the Mac side. And what I'm doing, I'm switching to Adobe Premiere for video editing, and Adobe After Effects to do all the effects. So it's like learning a new language in a way, and the older you get, the harder it is to learn new ways. But I'm starting to get there, and it is amazing what this new computer, with its power and the monitor quality, is like. It's out of this world. I'm going to make a video very soon about all this. But for the first time, I've been able to monitor my videos in 4K. Which is actually mind-blowing, you know. I didn't know I have so many gray hairs. You can see every single strand of hair, every single dust particle. I didn't know you guys with 4K TVs were able to see that much. But and not only the fact that I can see it, I could monitor, I could edit it in 4K, you know, viewing it live. You know, usually on the other computer, if I wanted to see a 4K or 2.5K, which is what I really had, I would have to render the files first and then watch them. But yeah, I'm very happy. I got, by the way, it's a new Dell XPS 15. It has a touch screen. It's like one of the, close to the top of the line. And yeah, I'm getting used to it. And some things I don't like and some things I like. For example, something is the attention to detail. And this is something that Apple gets right. If you're designing a computer, and this is, I'm going to geek out here real quick, you don't put the headphone amplifier close to the processor, because there's going to be electromagnetic interference. And when I put the headphones on the Dell and there is silence, you know, I'm writing or doing something other than editing video, there's this little annoying noise in the headphone. It's like bzz, 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 from time to time. It's not all the time. And usually what that means is that there is electromagnetic interference inside the body of the computer. That never happened with Apple. So it's those hardware design things, you know, that Apple is usually the only one that gets them right. But then again, this Dell, I could probably put up with those minor annoyances if I'm going to have an SD card slot, you know, a memory card slot. I'm going to have actual USB ports, 3.0, and you know, little things, an HDMI, you know, if I want to connect the computer to an external monitor or a TV. Those things that make this new computer much more usable. It's a better tool for the type of job that I want to do, and the 4K screen, which is amazing. So that's pretty much all I'm going to say about that. I am in the process. I might even skip a week of videos because I want to start editing all the Finland videos in the new computer. And I'm not going to redo my intro yet. Eventually I will, but I have to redo all the graphics. And I my idea is I'm going to start putting a little more graphics, maybe if I'm talking about the price or something, like at a restaurant, I might put a little, you know, like a dollar bill or dollar sign to the left and then put the price. I don't know. I'm trying to think of design clues to take the channel to the next level, which is, you know, I'm watching other YouTubers that do that kind of thing, and it looks cool on their channel. There's this guy actually, and I'm not gonna copy his style, but because we have very different styles, and he does his videos in Spanish. He's called Alan por el Mundo, you know, Alan around the world, and he does a lot of this iconography, you know, like. Like if he likes a place, he puts on the bottom left like 5 thumbs up, you know, like 5 likes. And if he doesn't like it, it's 1 like or 3 or whatever. I would like to start doing a little things like that. So even if I voice my opinion verbally, I can tell you of, you know, with an icon on the screen, whether I like something, whether something was expensive or not. Let me know in the comments, or shoot me an email, robert@travelingrobert.com with one L, robert@travelingrobert.com, if you would like to see something like that, if that's something that would make a difference, because I am going to do it anyways. But I want to include more maps on my videos as well. And I have to take a crash course on Adobe After Effects. It's super fun. There's some. It does a lot more than Final Cut for sure. I mean, little things, little details that Adobe Premiere, like when you do a picture in picture. I mean, this is nothing. This is trivial. But when you do a picture in picture in Final Cut, there's no way to put a drop shadow on that image. Or image, or it could be a photo, could be another video feed on top of the bottom, and just a little drop shadow gives it an extra 3D look that makes it look a lot more professional, and Premiere has that, and has it's a very deep programming, in the sense that you can do a lot with it, and it's gonna take me years to master it, but I think I've got the basics by now. I'm editing a simple video. I'm doing a review of an air conditioning soft start unit, and that's what I'm practicing with, and that's where I saw myself for the first time in 4K, and it's anyways, that's all I'm gonna talk about that. Sometimes I like to geek out like this and talk about computer and technology. And also let me know if you would like to hear more about the technology, the cameras, what I use, because that would be great. Okay, I have some mail. Some of you have used that feedback form on my website. And Maggie says, "Hi, Robert. We are hoping to stay in Albuquerque in September this year. I have not been there for 18 years now, and I've heard it's not a very safe place to stay. We'll be booking a hotel this trip. What would you suggest is a safer part of Albuquerque? I know the South Valley was always bad, but it may have changed a lot since we've been there. Thank you in advance, Maggie." And to be honest, I don't consider myself an expert on Albuquerque. I did stay at in the northern part of Albuquerque. It was, I forgot the name of this place. Let me pause the podcast right here and find out. Okay, as soon as I hit the pause button, I remember. It's called Bernalillo, which is with a double L, Bernalillo. You would pronounce it in English, but as I've mentioned, everything in New Mexico, is if it is a word of Spanish origin, they usually pronounce it in the Spanish pronunciation, so it should be Bernalillo, and it's like a suburb north of Albuquerque. It felt nice. I mean, I went to the supermarket. I went to have a hamburger at one of these. I forgot the name, but anyways, it seemed safe, like a regular American suburb, mostly Hispanic, Mexican. That's the vibe that I got from the people that I saw, but It seemed okay. And of course, if you go to the historic area, like the touristy area, it's probably gonna be safe. I don't know, there's the South Valley. I mean, if you watch the Breaking Bad, you know everybody's cooking meth in Albuquerque, but I'm sure that's of course a work of fiction. I liked it. I liked Albuquerque, and I didn't feel unsafe at any point. But actually, there's a very ritzy area to the east, you know, close to the Sandia Mountains, and all those suburbs seem to be like really, really, of course, safe and expensive to live at. And Nob Hill, that area seemed fine as well. That's very close to downtown on the old Route 66. But I'm really talking nonsense here because I truly don't know. I wonder if any of our listeners or viewers are from Albuquerque and would like to chime in. Send me an email and I'll mention it on the next episode of the podcast. As I said, robert@travelingrobert.com. And now, the quintessential question everybody asks, or a variation of, Billy asks, "How many miles on your Kia? And how do you keep it running so well? Well, Kia is going to be 15 years old in January. She's got 145,000 miles. And I just do the oil change, you know. I don't even put synthetic oil in it. It's just regular oil until like 70, 80,000 miles. I religiously took it whenever the mileage called for it to the dealer, and they did, you know, their services. And of course, they always overcharge you and do a bunch of things. I haven't done anything drastic since like 80,000 miles. So it's probably badly in need of a tune-up. You know, sometimes the engine has misfired and stuff, but it isn't too bad. And I do take care of like the air filters and like the basic stuff. But otherwise, she's just running on fumes, running well, and it's an old, reliable car. Sometimes cars, when they get this old and you already replaced whatever was faulty to begin with, they just run forever. I've seen old Toyotas with 300,000-400,000 miles, and they just keep chugging along, you know. Originally, I had some cooling problems in this Kia. It took like 3 or 4 trips to the Kia dealership until they finally figure it out, and it hasn't really overheated anymore, unless of course I'm going uphill towing the trailer, and that's expected. Now I usually on this podcast talk about a destination of the week, and that, to be honest, I didn't have one this week. Since, you know, I could talk about Finland all day long, but I'd rather save that for when I am editing those videos of that trip to Finland, Norway, and to some point Sweden, or we just drove through Sweden. We didn't really see anything of consequence in Sweden. But let me talk about Miami, because Miami is the city where I live, where I've lived for almost 30 years. And we don't get out as much as we would like. We usually go to the same places, but it is a good place to visit. I suppose it is one of the major American cities here, and it is different for sure from any other American city in the sense that sometimes it doesn't feel like America, but that's what could make it so enticing also for a lot of people. First of all, where to park your RV? There are no RV parks in Miami proper. There's nowhere where you can really legally park it. There's a couple of RV parks and campgrounds south, 20, 25 miles south, and then a couple 20, 25 miles north, but outside the city. Let me start with the south, and the main resort is at Angkor properly. I believe it's also Thousand Trails. No, I think it's only Angkor, you know. You know, they have the two of them, the ones that are included in the price and the ones that are just a discount. And this is Miami Everglades RV Resort, and I always joke that it's neither in Miami nor the Everglades, but it's like halfway. I suppose it is part of home. It's not even Homestead. It's a little north of Homestead. It's in that huge southwestern suburban area that is Miami. It's very close to the zoo. To the monkey jungle, actually. The one close to the zoo is another one, and this one is a county park, which I kind of recommend. It was one of the... We went there for our one anniversary of our trip, and this one is right next door to the zoo Miami. Although, if you want to go to the zoo, you have to, like, go around, like, 3 miles. You have to... But it is quite adjacent. There is just, like, one fence, and the elephants would be right there, just maybe a quarter mile away. It is called Larry and Penny Thompson Park, and it's cool. It's okay. I don't recall if it has full hookups. I don't think they do, but they have a handy dump station at the entrance and the exit. Another place where you can stay is a little further down, and the last time I was there, it was a little run down, but a viewer has recently told me that they are, you know, cleaning it up, you know, refurbishing it. That's not the word, but anyways, it's called Southern Comfort, and it's, you know, if you also want to hit the Keys, this would be a good place, because it is probably, what, 20, 25 minutes from Miami Central, but it is also about 20 minutes, or probably even less, from Key Largo, So if you want to visit the Florida Keys as well, or if you want to go to like the Everglades, that part of the Everglades down there, Southern Comfort, it is a good choice for sure. And I hear that they are improving the facilities. When I went there, it was run down, to be honest. And it is a little expensive, perhaps, but, you know, down here, pretty much everything is. So if you're used to, you know, $5, $10, $15, even $20 campgrounds up north, you ain't gonna find that in South Florida. Now, other places to stay nearby here to the west, there's it's called Gator Park. I've never been there, but I hear it's not great, but it's relatively close to the city. And then if you want to go further west, like an hour away, you can stay at one of the campgrounds in the Big Cypress National Preserve. You have Monument Lake, which is primitive, but there's also Midway Campground, which has water and an electric and a dump station, and it's usually booked in the winter, fully booked. But it's okay. Only drawback about Midway, it doesn't have cell phone service. Now, if you want to boondock for just one night, we have the Mikosuke Casino, which is right at the edge of town on Chrome Avenue. You know, right where Miami becomes the Everglades. That's the casino. You can park there, I think, for a couple of nights for free. I think you have to talk to the security. When we went, we didn't, because we couldn't find it. But it's there, you know. It's all the Miami people go there to gamble at night. So it's a party atmosphere if you wanna see some of that. And recently, I live kind of close to another casino here it's in Little Havana. It's called Magic City Casino. And lately I've seen a couple of RVs parked there. It's not officially in the All States app, so I have to ask. I'm going to ask one of these days if they allow overnight parking, because I keep seeing RVs there parked all the time. So, and it has a huge parking lot. I don't see why they wouldn't. So that's another option. And then to the north, of course, we have Hollywood and Fort Lauderdale, which are like, what, half an hour, 40 minutes from here. And in Hollywood, you have the KOA, which it's not much more than a parking lot. I stayed there once, and it's in a little bit of a shady neighborhood, you know. But nothing happened to us. It felt pretty safe. And then, of course, you have Markham Park, which is way out west, almost by the entrance to the Alligator Alley, if you were to go to that part of the Everglades or go to Naples. So it would be like an hour from Naples, Florida, in a sense. And around there, you also have C.B. Smith Park, which is in Pembroke Pines, west of Hollywood. And that's a decent choice too. Of course, it's like $30 on Reserve America, and after they put the fees and the taxes, it's probably like in the 40s. But you know, it is what it is. South Florida is expensive. Wait till we go to the Florida Keys, and it's over $100 per night for regular campground. Like, unless you are one of the lucky few who can get into one of the four state parks in the Florida Keys. Yeah, it's expensive. Anyways, but we're talking about Miami, and let me tell you a couple of the things that you can do in Miami. Of course, if you've seen the movies, what you've seen is Miami Beach. That's what they show you all the time, is the Art Deco District, which you have all these Art Deco hotels with neon signs lining up Ocean Drive. And it's an expensive area. It's a very touristy area. I probably wouldn't even recommend that you eat there, but because it is going to be expensive. These are all hotels. It's an area catered mainly to tourists. And but, you know, it's a thing. I think you should visit it. And the beach is a decent beach for East Coast Florida. It's one of the nicer ones. And if you're hot and you would like to have an $8 or $10 beer, you can always, go across the street into one of the bars and freshen up or anything else. I recommend walking around the Art Deco District. It's very nice. It's a relatively safe area for the most part, unless you late at night, if you go into the side streets, you might have a problem, but shouldn't be too bad. And there's also, of course, Lincoln Road, which was one of the first like pedestrian malls, you know, streets in the United States, and it's very nice. It's lined with restaurants and shops and all kinds of things. I haven't been there like in a couple of years, but it is, since I made my Miami Beach video, which was when was that? A year and a half ago, more or less. So those are the main two areas that I would visit in Miami Beach. Of course, you can keep going north and see the Surfside area. See all the there's this area with all the big hotels and then all the big condominiums, oceanfront, and then there's Bal Harbour Shops, which is like a very upscale mall. But pretty much, you know, I would stick to South Beach and Lincoln Road for the most part. And then, of course, you can come into Miami proper, and there's the area where I used to work, Brickell and Brickell Key, and that's a nice area, very expensive hotels, decent restaurants, a lot of chain restaurants as well, but, you know, it's the big city, you know, it's downtown, and Brickell is the nicer part of downtown, is the more modern part, the financial district, and of course, if you walk from Brickell north across the Miami River, you go into downtown proper, and there's Bayfront Park, which is something, yeah, it's touristy, but you should do it, and Bayside Marketplace. There you can take a boat tour of the homes of the rich and famous, and they also have like party boat tours. You can sail on a one of these cigarette fast boats. They have all kinds of tours, even a sailboat. You can sail on a I think it's a catamaran. There's a pirate ship, all kinds of things. And then there's live music. There's a bunch of bars, restaurants, shopping, you name it. It's our local tourist trap, but I don't see why not. Then if you want to get a little more into the local life, you can come a little further west from downtown into Little Havana. And Little Havana is a relatively small area, but the whole southwest of Miami is pretty much Little Havana, you know. And by that I mean culturally, is the area where people will speak Spanish first and then English if you go to a place. Spanish is the default language, is the de facto language in a lot of these areas. But in Little Havana, I would recommend the small touristy area. It's touristy, but it's the same in the same token, kind of authentic, if you will. And it's the area probably between 15th and 13th Avenue. It's like two or three blocks that they have. Let's say, I don't know the word, but they have made it friendlier to the tourists, and they have an ice cream shop and a bunch of restaurants, and they have live music in all the restaurants. Something you don't see in them. In the more authentic places that we would go to. But I recommend that area. 8th, Southwest 8th Street, which is also commonly known by its Spanish name, Calle Ocho. And between 15th and 13th Avenues are like the most... And it's the area where it all began. That's the area where Cubans in 1960 first moved into. So yeah, and then you can, of course, if you want something a little tad more authentic, you can find a restaurant a little further west if you really want to, like Versailles, or there's also La Carreta. There's a bunch of them, and send me an email if you want to know all of them. And that's more or less all I would do in Little Havana. Then, you have other areas, other suburb cities, which are part of Miami, but... it's like a separate city, like Coral Gables, for example. And downtown Coral Gables is very nice. Lots of restaurants. They recently banned plastic bags, which is a kind of odd. They recently remodeled the whole downtown, which I liked it better the way it was before. But maybe I'm an old man set in my ways. But it had a more classy look before. Now it's... anyways, but it's good. It's a lot to do in downtown Coral Gables, Miracle Mile, Alhambra... Circle, That whole area, and very beautiful architecture. If you want to drive around Coral Gables, around Alhambra Boulevard or Granada Boulevard, everything has names of cities or areas of Spain, by the way, like Andalusia and that kind of thing. But very, very nice architecture. A lot of old houses. This used to be the original suburb of Miami from the beginning of the 20th century, basically. And there's also Coconut Grove. There's a bunch of marinas, and if you wanna like have a decent oceanfront or bayfront meal, you know, there are places like Monty's that I've been visiting since I was a young man here. And it's still there, and it's not the most expensive place in the world, and you know it's one of those accessible. The parking is probably going to be your biggest expense there. It's like, yeah, parking. There's parking everywhere, but it's expensive. And there's another area of Miami that has more recently been revitalized. Recently meaning probably 10 years, but as I said, when you're setting your ways, you usually go to the same places. I have to go there. I haven't been there yet since it got revitalized. It used to be a pretty bad neighborhood back in the 90s and early 2000s. And this is Wynwood. And they have the Wynwood Walls, which is this area where they have made this... let's face it, it's graffiti, but it's art, quote-unquote graffiti. You know, it's murals, let's just put it that way. And it looks nice, and there's a bunch of breweries. There's a bunch of breweries there, and one of these days I'm gonna make it there and check it out and make a video for my YouTube channel. And that's all I can remember right now that you should really see in Miami. There's a bunch of areas, of course. If you wanna taste the Venezuelan cuisine, you go to the Doral area. If you wanna go to an authentic Argentine deli, Gracianos in Coral Gables, or Buenos Aires are a bakery in the northern part of Miami Beach. And each particular ethnicity, some of us have our little areas where, like, most of the Nicaraguans have moved to Sweetwater. Cubans are spread out, but mostly in the Flagami area, and then Kendall is mostly Colombian, and then Doral is mostly Venezuelan. Argentines are and Brazilians are in Miami Beach for the most part. It's all mixed up, but there are areas with more concentration, which is cool. And that's about it. And now, if you want to make a side trip, of course, you have the Florida Keys. This is the gateway to the Florida Keys. And if you want to go to the Florida Keys, yes, by all means, you know, it's one of my favorite areas. And then if you want to make another side trip, go north. Go to Hollywood. Hollywood Beach is very nice. Actually, it's what Miami Beach used to look like in the 90s, probably. And then you have Fort Lauderdale, which is our sister city up there. It's... And I will go to Fort Lauderdale Beach. There's a lot to do there. I don't go often enough. And I'm going to start going more often because I want to make some videos up there too. And that's pretty much all I have to say about Miami. There's a lot more, of course. And if you have any ideas, of course, send me an email and I'll mention it on the next episode. Now, I don't really have any news this week because I've been busy with my new computer, but I have a tip of the week that I just came to my head here a few minutes ago, to be honest. But it's something that, if especially now in the summer, if you live in humid areas and you're storing you're a weekender like I am, or I'm a little more of a part-timer, but a weekend warrior, part-time, and anybody who lives their RV sitting in their driveway or in storage for more than a week, damper it, because it is so humid. If you live in a humid area, this is a lifesaver. You, of course, leave your refrigerator open so it doesn't, you know, get smelly or mold in there, and just put one of these damper it containers. If you leave it there for a week or two, it will be full of water by the time you replace it, because it really does take the humidity out of the air. And inside your RV, that humidity will accumulate and you will get mold and other problems. So definitely get that stuff. Damprid, that's what I use. I have no Nomad news this week, so I'm going to finish it off so I can publish this video before it is too late. And I want to remind you that I recently became an affiliate with Techno RV. So if you want to get like a tire pressure monitoring system, or for example, a Wi-Fi Ranger, a WeBoost, anything technology related for your RV, you know, check them out, Techno RV. They give you a great service after the sale, and they do give you a good education before the sale. So you can talk to them, to Eric or Tammy, and they will help you out with your technology, because sometimes, even for a technology savvy person like me, sometimes it could be a little daunting. So just go to travelingrobert.com/technoRV, and that'll take you to my affiliate link with them, and you can check them out. You can do the same thing with Good Sam, and you know, Good Sam, you get discounts. Pretty much a lot of campgrounds will give you a Good Sam discount. You get like 5 cents off per gallon at Flying J's and Pilot gas stations, and there's a bunch of other discounts at Camping World and all that. So check it out, travelingrobert.com/goodsam, and you can get your membership there, and I get a little cut. Not much, but I get a little cut. And also, I'm an affiliate with Amazon, so whatever you buy with Amazon, it will cost you the same. And if you go through my link, yeah, I'll get a little bit of a commission, and it helps, let me tell you. It helps. So that I think I created a new link called the travelingrobert.com/Amazon. So you can go through there, and it'll take you to my list of favorite items for the RV. But even if you buy something else, it doesn't matter. I'll still get the commission, which is good. And that's it. This Sunday, I'm publishing, of course, the video about Lexington, Kentucky, which I haven't finished editing, which I'm going to do right now. So check that out. I liked Lexington. Great city, great town. And until next week, thank you so much for listening. And see you on the road, living the RV dream, living the RV lifestyle, free, overall free in our RV. Because traveling is freedom, let me tell you. Bye now. See you next week. Talk to you next week.